Cloudflare is a company that helps people and companies all over the world keep their websites online in a way that makes those sites quickly accessible and secure. There's been a dust-up recently between Cloudflare and the Onion Router, or Tor, project. Tor is the set of tools that helps people use the internet anonymously for good and bad. Cloudflare has made it more difficult for Tor users to access sites it hosts. Matthew Prince is CEO of Cloudflare. Matthew, thanks for chatting.
Thanks for having me on.
So Cloudflare is described as a content delivery network. Can you describe that to me as if I'm, I don't know, 9 years old? What does that mean? Yeah.
So what Cloudflare does is we help anyone who's putting content online. So a website, a mobile application, a modern web application, to be as fast as possible so that it loads incredibly quickly, and then to protect them from bad guys. So our job is to make the internet fast and protect it from attackers.
How do you do that? How do you do the first part of that?
So we run data centers all around the world. We have about 100 data centers on every inhabited continent, from very non-exotic places like Newark, New Jersey, which is the one closest to you, or I'm in San Francisco, so San Jose, California is the one closest to me. We have 22 across mainland China, Egypt, Cairo, all across Africa, the Middle East. And from that, we can then deliver the content of our customers closer to where their visitors are. And the speed of light's only so fast. And so if we can move that content closer, then it gets faster.
Tell me about the security part of this. You help websites protect themselves. How do you do that?
So we have over 4 million websites that are customers of ours, and you can almost think of it like a neighborhood watch. So if an attack comes against one of our customers, our systems automatically detect that attack and then stop it out at the edge of our network so it never actually gets to our customers' infrastructure. So we act almost like a force shield that you put in front of your website or your mobile application to keep it safe from hackers and spammers and anyone who might be trying to cause it harm.
Last month, you wrote in this blog post that 94% of requests you see from the anonymous Tor network are malicious. Can you tell me how you're handling traffic from Tor?
Sure. So Tor is a service that is designed to ensure that people can surf the internet anonymously. And that's extremely important for individuals who might be dissidents or might have their speech restricted in various parts of the world. Unfortunately, being anonymous is also really important for if you're a cyber criminal or a hacker. And so a lot of the attack traffic that we see directed at our customer sites is unfortunately using the same anonymous protection systems that human rights workers are using to keep their traffic anonymous. And so what we have is a challenge, which is how do we continue to keep our customers safe from attacks coming across this anonymous network while protecting the anonymity, which is really important, and imposing as little inconvenience as possible. And that's a tricky problem, but one that we continue to work on every day in order to make sure that we can preserve security and anonymity and be as convenient as possible.
Now, I know the Tor has said that millions of regular users are being blocked from access or have been blocked from accessing websites that use Cloudflare. And they might be, if they really need to access a website, tempted to use a browser that reveals their location and that's dangerous. Have you reached out to Tor to work with that organization on this issue specifically?
Yeah, we have a ton of conversations with the Tor project community. And I think the people who are the developers within Tor understand how this is a tricky issue. First of all, we don't actually block the traffic. What we do is we put what's called a CAPTCHA, which almost all of your listeners are probably familiar with some form of or another, where you have to type squiggly letters in a box. That's a very effective way of making sure automated attack tools don't come through, but that lets legitimate humans still get through that.
Sure.
That's not a perfect solution. Again, it's less convenient than using a non-anonymous browser would be. But it's the best solution that we've come up with to, again, continue to preserve the protections that our customers use us for, preserve the anonymity of the Tor users. And unfortunately, that means that we have to sacrifice a little bit of convenience. It's sort of like those signs that you see in diners sometimes where it says you can have the food and it can be fast, it can be good, and it can be cheap, but you can only pick two out of those three things. In our case, we need to have security. We really believe in anonymity. And so unfortunately, that means we have to sacrifice a little bit of convenience.
Well, the CAPTCHA part of this is also a pretty recent development, right? I mean, at one point you were blocking a majority of traffic, weren't you? And then you kind of gave your clients more tools to decide whether or not someone coming from an anonymous network was a bot.
Yeah, actually, that's not accurate. We've, from the beginning of Cloudflare's days, always used CAPTCHAs to restrict this automated traffic that might be using a network like Tor or any other network that might be sending malicious activity. So we've never actively blocked Tor. What the Tor community objects to is that sometimes the CAPTCHAs have been very difficult to pass. And so we actually use a service provided by Google for the CAPTCHAs called ReCAPTCHA. And we've worked with the Google team in order to decrease the complexity and difficulty of those CAPTCHAs, again, in order to still protect our customers, but make it not as inconvenient as it was at some point when those CAPTCHAs got sometimes, you know, incredibly difficult.
But it's fair to say that the tools that you provide have sort of evolved over time, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that maybe what you're referring to is that recently we made a decision to allow our customers to affirmatively treat traffic from Tor's network differently, to either be able to whitelist that traffic, or in which case it wouldn't see a CAPTCHA at all, or make it so that no matter what, that traffic would see a CAPTCHA. And, you know, I was pretty resistant to doing that for some time because when we talk to our publishers, the vast majority of them say, you know, I'd prefer you just block Tor entirely. And I think that we as a company that has as much reach as we do has a responsibility not just to our customers but to the internet as a whole.
Sure.
And wholesale blocking of Tor actually is a bad outcome. And so we weren't sure how we could allow people to whitelist something without also allowing them to blacklist something. So we kind of quietly rolled out the whitelist option. And at first, it was about 80% of customers were whitelisting Tor and about 20% were blacklisting it. Unfortunately, what's happened over the course of the last few weeks has been that publishers have voted with their own decisions. And they have now, a vast majority of customers have chosen to actually actively blacklist Tor. And that's actually an outcome I'm personally kind of disappointed in. And I wish we hadn't been sort of forced into a position of making.
Does it have to be that simple as far as whitelisting or blacklisting or turning off or on allowing this kind of traffic in?
Well, so again, I think that what we need to do is find a way to, again, preserve the security of our customers from these types of attacks, preserve the anonymity that something like Tor offers, but still find a way to filter out the 94% of requests that are trying to do harm to sites. And CAPTCHAs are one of the only solutions that we can implement on our end. What we're trying to do is work with the Tor community to see if there are solutions that they can be implemented on the Tor side, potentially creating a private area, which is known as a dot onion space.
Sure.
That Tor users can go to, or potentially making it so that the proof of work problem, the thing that proves that you're not a robot, is done on Tor side and then can be anonymously sent to providers like Cloudflare or Google or others that restrict this traffic. Unfortunately, that requires cooperation from the Tor project, and so far that's something that hasn't been forthcoming.
How did you guys get to this 94% number?
So we run a series of, you can almost think of it like traps that are scattered across the internet that track how bot how bots actually behave online. And so we watched for the number of requests that were coming to those various traps, the types of requests that were sending, payloads that were designed to potentially harm a site, bots that were automatically clicking on advertising on those sites, bots that were scraping email addresses off. And we compared that. We, at some level, it was just math. We looked at the number of requests that were made for that were falling into one of these traps, and divided it by the total number of requests across the Tor network. And 94% was actually a pretty conservative estimate. There, you know, that's not 94% of users of Tor are bad. That's 94% of the requests are bad. My hunch is it's actually a relatively small number of cyber criminals that are using automated systems that are sending, you know, thousands and thousands of requests per second, but they're sending them over the Tor network in order to preserve their anonymity.
Do you see an area of common ground for you and Tor to reach?
Absolutely. Again, I think that we are very much aligned with the mission of what Tor is doing. And so in the last few weeks, we've already made significant improvements to the CAPTCHAs. One of the complaints the Tor community had was that they'd sometimes get multiple CAPTCHAs. And so we worked with Google in order to reduce the number of CAPTCHAs that a Tor user would see. And again, you know, there are things that we could do to potentially sacrifice anonymity, but we believe that that's important. And so we are trying to find a way to work with them, whether it's a technical solution or ways that we can just decrease the amount of friction that they have to experience as they're using that anonymizing network. And we'll continue to make improvements as long as we're around, because again, I think that we not only have a duty to serve our customers who for the most part want just to block Tor, but we also have a duty to serve Tor users and the internet in general, and that's part of why we dedicate significant resources to this, even if it's not something that that our customers themselves our customers would largely just prefer to block the traffic entirely.
I want to shift gears for a second. I'm just curious to learn a little bit about what's happening in your business right now. You know, I've been thinking a lot about Intel this week and their purchase of the company that makes those chips that are more reprogrammable in the last year or so. And I know you guys deal with a lot of servers, a lot of storage. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on in the hardware space that you inhabit right now?
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that there's this macro trend where the world is shifting from on-premise hardware, software that you buy, so CapEx, to services delivered in the cloud that you rent. And that's impacting different companies in different ways. So you see HP, Dell, EMC, Sun, IBM, a bunch of companies that are the traditional hardware players all scrambling about trying to figure out how they stay relevant into the future when more and more of the computational tasks are being run on cloud services like Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, Google's Compute Cloud.
Sure.
And that's changing the direction. What we see is that same trend happening to companies like Cisco and Juniper and F5 and Riverbed, the traditional network types of companies. And increasingly, companies are turning to a service like Cloudflare in order to provide the functionality that you used to have to get from on-premise equipment. And that same trend that has really impacted the businesses of, you know, the Dells and HPs of the world, the move from hardware, software that you buy to services in the cloud that you rent is really coming for the networking companies as well. And what we're seeing is more and more of the businesses shifting to a service like ours as opposed to installing yet another box.
I understand that Cloudflare has a lot of presidential campaign candidates.
Yeah, Donald Trump is. In fact, I think every current presidential candidate other than Hillary Clinton is a Cloudflare user.
Hillary Clinton, an interesting outlier, considering the story of her emails. Can you talk a little bit about how doing security for these campaigns might be different than it would be to another kind of customer of yours?
Yeah, we had seen political campaigns use Cloudflare sort of increasingly around the world over the course of the last 4 years. And what has happened in other parts of the world is that one of the tools of a political campaign has increasingly become cyber attacks. So we had both of the, in the last Mexican presidential campaign, both candidates were Cloudflare customers, and we saw very significant attacks launched against them.
Wait, are you suggesting they're coming from other campaigns? Is that what you're suggesting?
Not necessarily. So we don't spend a lot of time on attribution, but the attacks are often coming from supporters or people who are detractors of other campaigns. And so recently, for example, the hacking collective Anonymous threatened to DDoS Donald Trump's properties.
Right. Yeah.
And that's one of the things that Cloudflare is particularly well suited to protect against. And so I think around the world, cyber attacks have become a real part of politics. The U.S. has actually been slow to have that happen. But this political campaign, this presidential campaign, we've seen the first of those types of attacks start to target U.S. presidential candidates. And again, the Donald Trump campaign with the hacking group Anonymous was one of those examples, and we were effective at protecting that site from that attack.
What do you anticipate is going to happen during the next presidential cycle? How is the landscape going to change?
Well, I think that if you look around the world, you see the leading edge of what is likely to come to the United States in 4 years' time. And so we're seeing more and more sophisticated attacks launched against political candidates in other parts of the world, and so that to me suggests that 4 years from now, the amount of protection you'll have to have if you're running for president will only increase, and that's what we do at Cloudflare, is we build those services to make sure that no matter who you are, no matter what political affinity you have, you're able to put your content online and reach an audience, which I think is absolutely critical for the internet and for a democracy.
Are these kinds of attacks these days usually still just DDoS stuff trying to bring a site down, or are some of these attacks starting to try and pull data from candidate sites?
Yeah, we see a very wide range of attacks. I think the DDoS attacks tend to get the most media coverage, but constantly for political campaigns, there are attacks that are trying to find any kind of vulnerability to download, say, a supporter's database or maybe information about who have been donors. So the same types of attacks that e-commerce organizations are seeing, increasingly we're seeing political candidates face those attacks as well.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, we live in interesting times,
to say the least.
As the old Chinese curse goes.
Matthew Prince is co-founder and CEO of Cloudflare. Matthew, thanks for talking with me.
Thanks for having me on.